When I was singing more, when my voice was in better shape, it was always a Pat Benatar song because I'm an 80s kid. But now, really, if you're going to put a mic in front of me at a karaoke, I'm going to give you my best Macy Gray impersonation.
Very nice. Well, Fran, thank you for coming on the show. I hope to have you on multiple times.
Thank you. I'd love to come back anytime.
Stay tuned for sound effects.
This is Sound Effects, a radio playground, a compendium of audio theater, comedy, and the audio arts. With your host, Jerry Stearns. Good evening, I'm Jerry Stearns, and tonight on Sound Effects, we're going to finish a story we began last week. It's a Doctor Who episode, one of the fan fiction stories from Mark Kalita, originally done at Darker Projects, but this is a re-release with a new introduction by Broken Sea Audio. In this, Doctor Who has been newly regenerated, and he has to come to the aid of Unit North America because they've found a new batch of enemies who have come to, as Pinky of the Brain do, take over the universe. So from Broken Sea Audio, this is part two of Grave White North with Doctor Who.
Robots. Try as they might, they'll always be nothing more than glorified toasters. Certainly nothing like you, old girl, eh? Well, you seem a bit quiet. Ah, probably just having a rest after this whole ordeal, eh? Imagine all that heavy artillery around you. No consideration. That's what it is, you know. So many life forms and so little consideration for their mechanical friends. I'll bet I took better care of K-9 than most people do the average Cocker Spaniel. Now there's an idea. I should build a new K-9. What would that make now? Three? Let's see. Leela, Romana, Sarah Jane. Oh yes, and the one in that carnival kiosk incident. How could I forget? My goodness, that would make him K-9 Mark V now, wouldn't it? Ah, now that was a companion, our K-9. No silly questions, no screaming, no falling off the edge of embankments. Unfortunately, no real sense of humor and not much of a dancer. Well, let's see how things are coming along outside, shall we? There they are. Looks like those robots are still down. Good. Just look at them, old girl. Unit, the next generation. But what's really changed? New location, that's about it. 1973, 2003. The only thing that really looks different, it seems now, is me. Oh, that doesn't sound right. You could probably do with a little exercise, I'll wager. Maybe an 800-year oil change, eh? Well, I think after all this excitement, maybe we can both do with a long rest. Maybe even think about settling down finally. No more Dalek attack fleets, no more alien intelligences, no more emergency calls from the Time Lords. Just you and me, maybe a nice fishing boat, and all the gumblejacks we can catch. If this is my last incarnation, I don't want to go wasting it saving the universe for the umpteen millionth time. I just want to go gentle into that good night. Take one last look, old girl. Right, that should be about it. Goodbye, Unit. Goodbye, Cosmic Rat Race. That can't be good. Of course! You have a thorn in your paw, don't you? How could I have forgotten? Well, you just wait here and I'll yank that thing out of your side and then we'll be off.
How's it coming, Doctor?
Oh, nearly there, Major. Just need to get this big metal spike out of the TARDIS's wall here. It's, disrupting my equipment. Look, it's glowing now.
Okay.
Now, let's see here. Well, that's been jammed in there pretty well.
Doctor!
Shh, I think I've almost got it.
But, Doctor, I think you should know.
Look, Major, I think I'm quite capable of removing this... Oh, dear.
Doctor, are you all right?
We really need to stop meeting like this, Major.
I'll get you to the infirmary.
Not again, you're not. I'll be fine.
That was quite a fight there.
Yes, but I think we have only a partial portion of the puzzle.
They what?
They destroyed the mechanoids.
But that's impossible. Their primitive weapons are not yet at a stage to destroy such technology.
I saw it myself through the ocular receptors. There was this one strange human. He possessed a sonic device that shut down the mechanoid's circuitry.
There is a difference between shutdown and destroyed. How were they destroyed?
When the human returned from his blue box, the mechanoids came back online. But their energy weapons had been damaged. I took control of the mechanoids and had them strike at him. He moved quickly, and the mechanoid struck a piece of metal that had been embedded in the box. Upon contact, the mechanoids were destroyed.
This is most unusual.
The blast was blinding, like a star going nova.
Did you at least find the machinery to mine the vein of corporite?
We were not able to secure any, but I think there may be something much better.
And that is?
The metal rod that the mechanoid had removed from the blue box. The energy scanners run it to be even greater than the total power reading obtained from the nearby vein. With the rod in our possession, we could easily adapt it to fuel our spacecraft and return home.
Yes. If we could obtain further pieces of the material, we might be able to do more than that.
Yes, leader.
But now is too soon. Their guards will surely be even more vigilant. We shall wait, and then you'll return for the metal rod.
I shall return with it or die, leader.
Nice work with those robots, Doctor.
Thank you, Major, but I'm afraid I can't accept full credit.
Why's that?
Because I really didn't do anything.
But, Doctor, I saw you in those things. First you shut them down with that gadget of yours, and then later one of them went to swipe at you, and the next minute, boom.
And when your people are finished examining the remains, they'll find that the explosion came from the inside out.
Some sort of self-destruct mechanism?
Possibly, but unlikely. Those robots were perfectly ready to annihilate me, but their energy weapons weren't working properly. Probably the result of my sonic disruption. So they resorted to brute force. However, their own clumsiness caused them to strike this spike.
Which blew them up.
Yes. Their positronic matrices couldn't survive the massive power surge this spike caused on contact. Everything inside them just burst outward like a giant metal blood vessel.
A giant robotic aneurysm?
Something like that, but much larger.
You mentioned that kettlebell robot earlier. Could these be advanced models of it someone built here?
The basis is there cosmetically, but the inner workings shouldn't come about until sometime in the mid-24th century, your time.
Are you saying those robots were from the future?
Not necessarily, but their inner technology is certainly far removed from that of this time in this galaxy's present species.
Are you saying we'll be in more contact with aliens by the 24th century?
Oh, most definitely. My dear Major, aliens have been among your people for millennia.
You mean all those stories about gray bug-eyed aliens and Roswell and Area 51? All that abduction stuff is real?
In more cases than most people choose to believe. But I assure you, not all races are cute little ETs just trying to phone home.
So we are in some kind of danger?
Perhaps. Those types of robots are essentially scout machines. That means either somebody programmed them or was controlling them remotely. They were obviously looking for something. The question is, what?
Or who?
Precisely. The second curious thing involves the reaction between this metal rod and their positronic networks. An explosion like that usually only happens when two oppositely charged materials come in contact, which means this metal has a type of negative charge to it.
I think we've all had rudimentary chemistry and physics classes, Doctor.
Then you're no doubt aware that positrons are a form of antimatter.
I have a vague recollection.
And you don't think it a bit odd that the reaction didn't also blow up this entire country as well?
Good Lord, could that have actually happened? I mean, the whole country blow up?
You never want matter and antimatter to collide, Major.
So what kept everything from going sky high?
I suspect it was my TARDIS. She probably siphoned off the reactive energy. My concern is what it might have done to her own circuits.
Well, it couldn't have been too bad, Doctor. The TARDIS looks like she held up.
That remains to be seen. But there is one final mystery I need to explore, however.
What's that?
This piece of lint.
Lint?
Yes. After the explosion, you'll recall, I held part of the robot's arm joint in my hand. Stuck in it was this piece of reddish lint. Looks more like a type of fur, don't you think? I shall need to analyze it. Tell me, Major, what clues have you found in those alleged Sasquatch maulings?
You mean apart from the mangled human body parts, blood samples, and ape-like footprint impressions?
No hair or fur samples?
Not that we've found yet, Doctor, but we're not exactly a forensic lab.
Well, fortunately, I am. Or rather, I have one in the TARDIS.
Excellent. Then I suppose you'd like to examine what we have and make some sort of comparative analysis.
Naturally. If I can make some sort of positive identification on this fur, and if my theory is correct, I may be close to an answer as to who's been killing those hunters.
Fantastic! I can take you over by Captain McDonald. She'll show you to the morgue.
Good. One other thing, Major.
Yes?
I suspect I'll want to see where the actual killings took place. Tomorrow is as good a day as any.
Of course, Doctor. Major Levesque will take a squad and drive you to the pertinent sites tomorrow morning.
Thank you.
Will there be anything else?
Ever read Pierre Boulle?
I don't believe so.
Pity. He wrote an excellent book about a planet where apes ruled civilization and humans were used for scientific observation. I must lend you my copy sometime.
Well, that's the last of them, Doctor. All torn apart by something very strong. No apparent tooth or claw marks.
Nothing but this.
That bluish smear? I don't know. Sunscreen? They were hunters, and it can get pretty bright up here.
Doesn't that color look familiar, Captain? Think out of the box.
I have no idea, Doctor.
Oxidization.
Okay. Maybe if he had something soft and made out of copper rubbed against him.
Or spattered on him and then rubbed across. Look more closely at these other spots.
You mean like liquid copper?
I mean like blood.
No animal on Earth has a copper-based blood.
Top of the class, Captain. The operative words being, on this Earth. Let's get a sample of this and put it under the old microscope. I will bet you a box of chocolates that we'll find that to be blood.
Alien blood.
Not all alien blood melts through metal like some sort of acid, my dear. We're not in the movies.
Let me get a scraping or two and put that in a test tube. Right, that should do it. Ready to go?
I am. My only hope is that after that feedback explosion, the TARDIS will be. I don't believe it.
This isn't repairable, I take it? But what happened?
The TARDIS has somehow switched the console room back.
This is what it used to look like?
Briefly, yes. This is my old secondary console room. Sort of a do-it-yourself project I worked on a long time ago while I was trying to get the look of the room that you saw earlier. Got the wooden brass accents, the marble flooring.
I like those round window things.
Well, I'm bloody sick of them.
At least a couple of them are in stained glass. That's pretty classy.
Captain McDonald, you have no idea how long I've traveled through time and space. Centuries, my dear, centuries, with those infernal roundels all about me.
It took me 6 regenerations to get everything right, and now what do I have to show for it? A beautiful Gothic cathedral? No! I'm back to a bloody recreation room!
Granted, it is a bit smaller.
Oh no.
What is it?
I wonder if my entire architectural configuration system is working.
What?
Architectural configuration system. It's how I can redesign the TARDIS interior to my tastes or moods. Create or delete rooms as the spirit hits me.
I'll bet that would be really handy on that changing rooms show.
You don't understand. If the circuitry is off, there's no telling what might be behind the next door. I could conceivably go to the kitchen for some muffins, only to find the kitchen has been replaced by the loo.
Hey, at least it saves you a step.
Or it could simply open up into the vacuum of space. End of doctor, end of story.
Is it hard to fix?
With materials from your time and planet, yes.
Why don't you come back to the barracks and get some rest then? I think if you try to find your room in here, it may take you a couple weeks. Don't forget, you've got a Sasquatch hunt in the morning.
Perhaps you're right.
Trust me, I'm a doctor.
Yesterday's incidents.
When I left him last night, I think he was more disappointed than anything else.
I thought I heard some activity in his quarters, but I figured it was probably him just feeling a bit restless.
Did you check in on him?
No.
Have either of you seen him at all this morning?
No.
Well, for everyone's sake, I hope he's still even with us.
Yes!
Doctor, where did you get that ATV?
ATV? Is that what this is?
It stands for all-terrain vehicle.
Fantastic invention! Much better than those old motorbikes.
Well, I'm happy to see you in better spirits this morning, Doctor. I trust you slept well?
Didn't have time, Captain. We did have work to do on those blood samples, after all. Besides, my mind was too restless, so I went back to the TARDIS. It turns out that the rooms are still essentially where they should be. Well, except for...
Except for what?
My linen closet now contains a 40-lane bowling alley. Mind you, I like the combination library and billiards room, though.
But did you analyze the blood?
Yes.
Well?
T-positive.
There isn't such thing as T-positive blood.
There certainly is. That chap Mr. Spock has T-negative blood.
Spock was a TV character.
Right. I'm talking about the guy that played him.
Leonard Nimoy?
That's him. What? Surely you all didn't think he was actually from here, did you? Now, as I was trying to say, T-type blood is high in copper and is usually found in species indigenous to warmer planets. Upon examining the phenotypes and antibodies contained in the sample we retrieved, I could come to only one conclusion. Ogris Danubii.
What's an Ogris Danubii?
A species of Ogron, Colonel. The Ogrons are a brutish ape-like race from the planet Ogrilla several thousand light-years from here. But the final confirmation came in the form of this piece of orange fur found in the destroyed robot's arm joint. Fur not unlike that of an Earth orangutan. So I examined the fur and ran a couple tests and concluded that the brains behind our robotic friends, and I suspect the originators of the whole Sasquatch myth, are in fact a race called the Danubii.
I've read about the Ogrons in some old unit files. They acted as henchmen for the Daleks a while ago, didn't they? So what are they doing here now?
I have no idea, but I'm very intrigued to find out. I only hope it doesn't mean the Daleks have returned as well.
Do you think these creatures are the ones who killed the poachers?
More than likely, but it's probable that they were provoked first.
You mean as in shot at?
Precisely, Captain. The Danubii are nothing if not a bit vain when it comes to how they see themselves. So naturally, they'd take quite an insult in being attacked by beings they saw as inferior. The Ogrons tend to be rather dull-witted, but the Danubii are a few steps higher up on the evolutionary ladder, as it were. So, naturally, they see themselves as superior. Scientists as compared to warriors.
Like the orangutans or the chimpanzees versus the gorillas in Planet of the Apes.
Ah, so you found Bull's book, then?
There was a copy in the base's library. I decided to check it out for a little light reading last night. Didn't remember a whole lot from the old movie.
They filmed it? Extraordinary.
So, are you all ready for our Sasquatch hunt, Doctor?
I think you mean Danube hunt, Major. And I will tell you, I prefer quest. I don't care much for the connotations of the word hunt. Right! Then what are we waiting for, Major? The game is afoot!
All right, Doctor, this is the site.
Ah, yes. I see. Interesting.
What is it?
Spent shotgun shell casings. The remains of a campfire. These scrub brushes look disturbed. Fairly freshly broken. Traces of blood. Yes.
It is him, Leader. Look at the view screen.
That is the young human who stopped our defense mechanoids? He looks to be of no threat.
This time he brings an army with him.
Then that will be their undoing. We shall capture this human and interrogate him. He will give us the secret of the power source that destroyed the mechanoids. If he proves of interest, perhaps we will bring him back to Danubis and make him a curiosity in our zoo.
And the army?
We shall destroy them.
What's that you've got there, Doctor?
It's a vibratory electromagnetic atmospheric phase shift analyzer. Think of it as a sort of electronic bloodhound.
Ah, now that sounds very handy. Will it tell us where our Sasquatches, Danube are?
With luck. But what I'm hoping for is a location on their ship.
Looks like you're getting something. I have no idea what, though.
I would say that we're no more than 20 meters from their vessel.
You're kidding!
Shh! Try to act natural. Yes, it's about 20 meters to the left. The ship is cloaked, of course, which is why nobody saw it. However, the readings I have show that the energy emissions are unusually weak.
Is that good or bad?
Well, I'm not quite sure. It means they're either low on fuel or channeling their power to a weapon system.
So you think they see us?
Oh, most definitely.
What do you suggest we do?
I suggest you get back to your trucks.
Okay.
And whatever happens to me in the next 2 minutes, you do not take any action except to get back to headquarters.
Doctor, I'm afraid I can't let anything happen to you. Colonel Hudson would have my head. Not to mention what the Brigadier would do.
I appreciate the sentiment, but if you want answers, then you need to let me help you find them. Besides, somebody needs to report back on what we found.
All right. But look after yourself. Don't make me have to cause some kind of intergalactic incident.
There's certainly been enough of those. Now go. Let's see. Now, if I were the entry hatch to a Danube scout ship, where would I place myself? Yes, that's exactly where I'd put it. Ah, my welcoming committee. Good morning, chaps. How about, as they say, you take me to your leader? Yes, thank you, but I didn't mean to... literally pick me up and take me to him. Ah, do you mind? There's a brand new biceps.
Perkins, get Colonel Hudson on the radio.
Leader, our weapons battery is nearly exhausted. If we are to destroy those humans, we will need to do it with the mechanoids.
Very well. Let us first see what information this particular one holds. Perhaps he can be of some use.
All right, you two can put me down. I may be old, but I'm far from feeble.
Release him.
You're too kind.
You are the leader of the humans outside?
No, I'm not.
But you are a warrior of some sort.
Not in a martial sense.
You were seen defeating our defense mechanoids. We have never witnessed a human who could overpower them.
And apparently you still haven't.
You are not human?
Oh, not exactly. I'm a Time Lord. People call me the Doctor.
A Gallifreyan? Ah, now this makes more sense. Surely no human would have the intelligence or the power to defeat our defense mechanoids.
Never underestimate them. Humans can be a resourceful lot. Perhaps more so than many species give them credit for.
And what are you doing on this planet, Time Lord? Are you attempting to alter their history? Affect their evolution?
Well, as it happens, my ship... Well, now, just wait a minute here. Who are you to start interrogating me?
I am called Duga, leader of this expeditionary force. He is Tabar, fiercest of our warriors and my second in command.
Now that the pleasantries are over, I might be asking you both what in the blazes are a pair of Danube scouts doing here as well? And while I'm at it, why have you killed several of those humans?
The primitives attacked while I was conducting a search for corporite, with which to repower our ship.
Oh, just out of the blue, eh? A likely story.
It is true. For centuries, the Danube have come to this planet to examine the development of the human species. During our last journey, this craft was disabled by a malfunction caused by a stray electromagnetic pulse. To avoid being disintegrated by too fast of a re-entry into this planet's atmosphere, we rerouted all power to our protective shielding. As a result, we have nearly drained our resources of corporite.
What possible reason could the Danube care about the humans of this planet?
For many years, we have employed the Ogrons as laborers, but they are all but extinct, having been used as fodder by other races like the Daleks. We have been waiting to see if the humans could prove to be more valuable substitute, or perhaps of even greater use. With them, we would rebuild our planet and soon conquer many others.
Slaves? You're talking about slavery.
A practice not unknown to the humans, and one that was practiced only a short time ago.
Yes, until many of them came to their senses and abolished it.
We have watched the development of the species. They lack the development to govern themselves properly. They are still little more than savages, and as such, ought to be governed by the betters.
This lesson of morality brought to us by a race of quasi-intelligent orangutans. Just listen to yourself, Dugar. What you're talking about is outrageous.
No, Doctor. It is the natural order of things. The weak shall serve the strong or perish beneath their feet.
And if the Danube are so infernally strong, why should they need the help of the humans to begin with? Answer me that one.
I need no lecture on morality from you, Time Lord. Your people have been the guiltiest of all in using other races to do their bidding.
The Time Lords may have their faults, and I'll be the first one to admit it. But their overall interests are ideally for the good of keeping the order of time and space balanced.
A biased opinion, and consequently, not worth any further argument.
Take it as you will. But, O mighty Dugar, you still haven't solved your fuel problem. And if you can't even get off this planet, I don't foresee you doing much conquering of anything.
The solution is simple, Time Lord. You will fetch the metal energy rod and bring it back to us. After you have integrated it into our power core, you will leave peacefully.
Only to return another day with an invasion force to take over the human race? I'm sorry, but I'm afraid I don't see the benefit for either myself or these people. If I refuse to help you, I'm afraid you're stuck here.
Then you and the humans outside our ship will die. We will take your machinery afterwards and mine the corporite we need. It will take longer, but we will still succeed.
In the end, we cannot fail. The choice is yours, Time Lord. Help us, or you and your companions will die.
Well, I suppose I have little choice indeed. Very well, I accept your terms. I'll just be off then. You don't need to show me the way out.
You will send your people to get it.
Oh, very well. But I shall still need to speak with them.
We'll be back to Doctor Who right after these words from Fresh Air Radio.
This is Twin Cities Community Radio, KFAI, 90.3 FM in Minneapolis and St. Paul, and streaming and archived at kfai.org. Always a breath of fresh air.
Shields are holding, Captain.
Evasive maneuvers, Ensign.
A message coming in, sir.
Put it on the speakers.
You're listening to Sound Effects, a radio playground on KFAI Community Radio.
Well, that explains a lot.
Hi, welcome back. I'm Jerry Stearns. And here on Sound Effects Tonight, we are listening to the final chapters of a Doctor Who fan fiction episode called Grave White North. Now, this one comes from Broken Sea Audio, who added a new introduction to it because it was originally made at darkerprojects.com and even started with someone else before them. There are others who make official Doctor Who audio. That group is called Big Finish out of the UK. But this one's fan fiction. But it's well worth fan fiction. Good stuff. So here is the conclusion. Part 4 of Doctor Who in Grave White North.
Hold your fire! Doctor, are you all right?
Well enough. It seems these chaps have run out of petrol, though.
What can we do?
Well, I'm afraid I'm being held as a bit of a hostage at the moment. However, if one of you would be good enough to nip back to my TARDIS and get that metal rod I pulled out of it, we might be able to set things right.
Where exactly is it?
It's in an ornately decorated box on top of a round table next to the control console. Oh, and things may look a bit different from what you remember, but that's still where you'll find it.
Levesque, get over there and get that rod right away.
Yes, ma'am. Perkins, back to the motor pool. Double time.
T-Bar, how nice of you to join us. Come for a bit of fresh air. That ship can get rather stuffy.
Be silent, Time Lord, or I will make it a point to tear you apart like I did the humans.
Fine way to treat your mechanic.
I've got it, Doctor.
Well done. Now, bring me the box.
Any false moves, and you will both die, Time Lord.
Thank you, Major. You may now go back to the troops. I have things well in hand.
Are you sure, Doctor?
Of course. I just need to make a few repairs for the Danube here, and they'll be on their way.
But what about the men they killed?
Major, I said things are well in hand. Thank you.
Have the power rod?
Yes, right in this box.
I would see it.
You don't trust me?
Lesser species are unpredictable.
Oh, very well. Here.
This was the metal you saw, Tabar?
Yes, leader.
Very well. You will accompany the Time Lord to the ship's drive chamber for the repairs.
This may take a bit of time, you know. I'm afraid I'm a bit limited on tools. Just my old sonic screwdriver here. but I think I'll be able to make do.
You will make the necessary repairs, or I shall crush your skull into powder.
How encouraging. Right, off we go then. Think that should about do it?
You have made the necessary adaptations?
Of course. It was simply a matter of resetting the containment grid and altering the energy influx capacitors. Watch. If you look at that gauge there, you'll notice it's moved from the red zone into the blue zone. That means you're all filled up now. Sorry I don't have a squeegee for your windows or something to check your tires with. But I think you're all set.
What is it?
Leader, the Time Lord has replenished our power supply.
It seems he has. Excellent.
Shall I kill him now, Leader?
No. Bring him to the control room.
As you command.
Well, we can't win them all, can we?
Perhaps not now, Time Lord. But do not be so sure about later.
You have done well, Time Lord.
Don't mind my saying, a Danube scout ship's engine is hardly a TARDIS. But if it gets you where you want to go, who are we to complain then, eh?
It is a pity the humans aren't more like you.
Well, nobody's perfect.
But then, they would pose more of a threat to us and to other races.
Right now, Dugar, I think the humans' biggest threat is probably to themselves.
Not so, Doctor. You see, too many of them now know of us.
What? You mean the chaps outside? Oh, rubbish. They're simply observers. They only wish to learn about alien races who visit this planet, not harm them.
That is irrelevant. Up until now, we were believed to be nothing more than mythical creatures. Now that we have revealed ourselves, they will report back to their superiors and the truth will be known. It could be time for them to make preparations against our invasion force.
Be serious. You said it yourselves that humans were too primitive to pose a threat to the Danube. What would you lot have to worry about? Surely they could hardly prevent being overcome by your armies.
I would have believed this, were it not for one thing.
Yes?
You. A Time Lord could easily give them the technology and training they need to defend themselves against us. We will take no chances against that.
Let me guess. You're planning to kill me and then them.
At first, I planned to take you back with us to Danubis as a zoological curiosity. But now, I see you pose too great a threat to be left alive.
Oh dear, not again. Will I at least have time to say a few last words before my execution?
If that is your custom.
Yes. The condemned man always has one final thing to say before being executed.
A useless sentiment, but very well. Speak.
Your robot's shoelaces are untied.
What?
Bye-bye, Dugar. Have a nice flight home.
After him, you fool.
I will take a shortcut and cut off his exit route.
Hang on. I don't remember this corridor. Wait a minute. Straight, left, straight, straight, right, straight, right, right, straight. Or should that have been straight, left, left, right?
There is nowhere left to run now, Time Boy.
Well, relatively speaking, that's true. But it's only relative to how long you're standing there blocking my way.
I have been waiting to do this, Time Boy. I think I will keep your skull as a trophy.
You'll have to get it first, and I'm actually rather attached to it.
Not for long.
Then I guess it's a Mexican standoff, partner. Draw.
Enough of your foolish toys. You will learn I do not fall as easily to your tricks as a mere mechanoid.
I don't suppose you'd just let me escape, would you? I suppose I should thank you for that first punch, T-Bar. It seems to have actually restored my command of Venusian Aikido. Very kind of you, old chap. Now, if you don't mind, I really must be leaving this time. But first, I need to collect my sonic screwdriver.
He's been in there for quite some time, Colonel. Do you think he's still all right?
I hope so. If we don't hear from him in another 30 minutes, contact UKHQ and ask for further instructions on how to proceed.
Right.
Doctor!
I think you might want to get your troops moving, Colonel.
Did you fix their ship?
Yes, I think.
Hey, I can see the ship now.
They're uncloaking. The usual procedure before takeoff, or before firing their weapons. Now let's go!
They're lifting off! Look!
The bottom of the ship is glowing. What does that mean?
Those are the ion cannons.
What happened?
I guess that metal rod wasn't as compatible with Danube power converters as I thought. Or maybe I should have connected the red cable to the red socket. Honestly, the mechanics of Danube weapon systems and propulsion systems look so much alike, it's hard to tell which is which.
Doctor, you did it!
Well, I didn't exactly mean to.
You didn't purposely sabotage their ship?
Not like that. I just set things up to give them a sort of flat tire out in the middle of the cosmos in a few days. I guess whatever that rod was, it overloaded everything when I reversed the polarity of the neutron flow.
If it's any consolation, Doctor, I think you did us all a big favor.
I certainly hope so.
So, these weren't Sasquatches after all, then, Hudson?
No, Brigadier. They were an alien species called the Danube, related to those Ogron creatures back in the 1970s. It would seem they've been coming to Earth periodically over the centuries, observing the development of the human race to see if they could be fit as some sort of soldiers or work drones or something.
Looks like another new entry for our files. One more species of alien to look out for, eh? I dare say I'm dash glad the Doctor returned when he did. Heaven knows what might have happened otherwise. And speaking of our scientific advisor, where is he now?
At the motor pool, sir. He said he needed to make a few urgent adjustments to his TARDIS.
Of course. Always fiddling with that amazing box, what? Well, when he gets through, do invite him to stay on with you lot. It looks as if Unit NA does indeed have a cause to remain in business. Since we were lucky enough to have the Doctor for a few years, why don't you hang on to him now, if you can?
I'll be sure to ask him.
Well done, Hudson. Pass on my compliments to Levesque and the rest. And tell the Doctor to come round for a visit when he gets the chance. I'd like to meet him in person.
I will, sir.
Right. Good day, Hudson. Griffin out.
Sir?
What is it, soldier? Wait. Perkins, isn't it?
That's right, sir. Sorry to bother you, but I found this metal rod buried in the side of the truck you were riding in after the explosion. I remembered seeing you holding it earlier, before you went inside that spaceship. Thought you might want it back.
Oh. Yes. Mustn't forget that, eh? Thank you, Perkins.
You're welcome, sir, and thank you.
Ah, Doctor! I'm glad I found you.
Well, wherever my TARDIS is, I'm not too far behind.
I see you found that metal spike thing.
Yes, funny thing. If I didn't know better, I think it found me.
Mysteries just seem to have bound around you, it seems.
All part of my karma, if you believe that sort of thing.
There may be something to it. Certainly something brought you back to UNIT, about UNIT North America. Still, we're both part of the same team.
You do have a lot in common.
I meant UNIT and yourself.
Ah, yes. Well, we certainly have spent quite a while together, haven't we? Pretty much an entire regeneration, as I recall.
So why not spend some more of this regeneration with us?
Because, Colonel, quite frankly, I still don't know exactly how much time I have left. The last time I worked with UNIT, it was more by accident. While they were all splendid chaps, I found myself getting a bit restless, confined to a single time and place. So when the opportunity arose to travel again, I took it.
I understand.
Now, this isn't to say I won't come back, of course.
Well, Doctor, when you do, you'll always have a place in Canada with us.
Thank you, Colonel.
So, do you need to be off right away?
I think I'm fit enough. Don't know if Captain MacDonald would agree, though. But it seems I have a few things I need to sort out between my new body, my TARDIS, and this mysterious metal rod. Do tell Major Levesque and Captain MacDonald I look forward to seeing them again.
I will, and I'm sure they feel the same way. Hope to see you soon, Doctor.
All in good time, Colonel. All in good time.
I'm surprised they didn't include credits there. I do know that Mark Kalita, who wrote the story, also played the Doctor. Eric Busby was in the cast, but he also did all the audio production for it. And all the music was original with the BBC Radiophonic Workshop, who did the original Doctor Who television show. So there you are. There's more Doctor Who at Broken Sea Audio and at darkerprojects.com. Now, since we're on to this sort of moderately not-so-serious science fiction, here's a piece from Shockwave, a good old show from that used to be here on Fresh Air Radio, written by Brian Wesley. And it was performed amongst the best of Shockwave Live, Volume 3. Performed live, Pete Moss, Space Detective.
And now it's time for the adventures of Pete Moss, Space Detective! This episode is brought to you by Counterfectionary Incorporated, the all-artificial candy company. Try our latest mints, Inerts, the breath freshener that just sits there in your mouth. And now, tonight's episode, The Perils of Praline. As we begin our story, we find Pete Moss idly filing his nails.
Well, let's see. Tenpenny, finishing, box. Pete Moss, Space Detective. Iv? Mr. Cream, eh? Yeah, I've heard of you. What? Your daughter's been kidnapped? What happened? Okay, I'll be right over.
Met Dick Cream, closest to his recruit, had awakened this morning to find that his lovely daughter, Praline's Anne, had been abducted. Mr. Cream, sole producer of 2% Stroon, the longevity dairy product, had been instructed to leave 50 billion tons of unrefined Stroon under a rock in Central Park if he ever wanted to see pralines again. The rain was beating a broccoli staccato on my windshield as I pulled up to the Cream estate. The maid took my hat and wallet as she ushered me into a movie theater where I met the old man.
What do you mean, old man?
Sorry, just thinking out loud.
Moss, I want to be frank with you.
That's Jake with me, Buster.
I'm concerned with my daughter's safety, and I want to make sure you're the right man for the job.
Go ahead, it's your dime.
Moss, the detective I hire must be observant.
I have the eyes of a potato.
He must be alert.
I have ears of corn.
And he must be fearless.
I have the heart of an artichoke.
Listen, don't get cute with me, mister, or I'll eat you for lunch. This investigation must be carried out in complete secrecy. By the way, here's our old family retainer.
No thanks, I've got braces.
Moss, you've got to rescue my daughter. I'm adamant, I tell you, adamant!
And I am super chicken. Mr. Cream, here's your dime back. You've got yourself a detective.
I left the stately Cream mansion and went to meet Bermuda Schwartz, a friend of mine who was a reporter with the Martian Chronicle. I cruised through the velvet fog to the Sticky Space Bar, a beer joint in one of the seedy neighborhoods in town. He got in my car and we talked about the case at hand.
Hi, Bermuda.
Hi, Pete. How's Drix?
She's fine, which is more than I can say about pralines and...
Yeah, I heard you were on that case. Listen, I can give you a little inside information. The cops are looking for Heavy Cream.
Praline's brother?
Half-brother. They can't find him, though. They don't know where to look.
And you do?
No, but I think I know who does. His girlfriend, Sarah Dippity. Maybe she knows something.
Thanks, pal. I owe you one.
I left Bermuda in a bar at the top of page 4, and I continued my search for Serendipity. I knew she would be hard to find, partly because her boyfriend was wanted by the police, but mostly because Bermuda had taken my script. I drove through the luminiferous ether to Sarah's place in one of the seedier neighborhoods of town. I busted through the door to discover one of the most naked women I've ever seen.
Hi, big boy.
Lucky I ran into you, Serendipity. Praline's Aunt Cream has been kidnapped, and I've been fired to hind her.
What's that got to do with me?
I'm looking for Heavy Cream.
Try the dairy section at Super Value.
Don't act innocent with me, baby.
Hey, I thought I was acting sultry.
You were. That was my line.
Don't act innocent with me, baby.
Hey, I thought I was acting sultry.
You were. That was my line.
Don't act innocent with me, baby.
Hey, I've never heard of Heavy Cream.
Listen, sister, you'd better play ball with me or I'll block your knockoff.
My charm persuaded her to tell me where he was, laying low at the old rug-weaving factory. I practiced girding my loins and left to see if I could get a rise out of Heavy Cream. I raced through the phlogiston to Heavy's hideout in one of the seediest neighborhoods of town. The weaving factory loomed ahead. I pulled around to the back and let myself in with a set of nose picks. The place was a mess, from the cockroaches fighting on the coffee table to the 5 o'clock shadow on the sundial. Heavy was watching me with trepidation, his vicious pit poodle.
Are you Heavy Cream?
Yeah, who are you?
I'm Pete Moss, solver of inexplicable crimes, tracer of lost beings, deliverer of valuable objects, explainer of time paradoxes, speaker to animals, protector...
What do you want?
I'm looking for some Stroon, about 50 billion tons or so.
Yeah? Well, I was just about to have a spade gerbil. You want one?
Sure.
I wasn't so sure about his hospitality. I poured my drink into his philodendron and fell over unconscious. When I came to, he was gone. A lump on my head felt like an overripe grapefruit. I eventually traced him to a used chemical store where I kept him under constant observation. I didn't want to be conspicuous, so I pulled my hat down over my eyes and walked into the door. He left carrying a small container of liquid. I continued to follow him until he arrived at an abandoned baby factory. I ran up 3 easy steps, down the new and improved hallway to the best door money can buy, and throwing caution to the winds and my weight against the door, I broke it open and poked around until I came upon...
Pralines and Cream!
Hey, watch who you're poking!
But, Miss Cream, I'm here to save you. I followed your brother.
He's not Heavy.
He's your brother.
No, I'm not. No, I'm not, Moss. Look again!
Why, it's Achilles' heel, my archenemy. Why did you kidnap Miss Cream?
To get the Stroon. You see, I'm going to contaminate it with No Kids Your Own, a chemical that will render everyone in the whole world sterile.
That's inconceivable.
Soon, everyone but me will be sterile, and my descendants will rule the earth. I'm sorry you won't live to see it. By the way, Moss, how did you know the drink I served you was poisoned?
Let's just say I'm omnivorous.
Guards!
He locked us in a small room and slapped a guard outside our door. We had to escape. I had a plan. I engaged our guard in light banter while Miss Cream slipped a placebo into his coffee. A few minutes, the guard was out like a rock. Pralines and I went through his pockets to a narrow hallway where we slipped out the back door.
We've escaped!
But Achilles still has the Stroon inside. We've got to do something to stop him.
I'm going back in there with you.
No, Miss Cream, I'm afraid it's too dangerous for you.
You mean you're going in there alone?
No, I'm afraid it's too dangerous for me, too. We'll have to think of something else.
Fortunately, I was wearing my thermonuclear underwear. I lit the zipper and...
Now to get you back to your father. Whoa, look out for this tree. Why, Miss Cream, without your glasses, you're fuzzy. How do you do that?
Why, Pete, you dropped your glasses.
Oh, thank you, Miss Cream. By the way, call me Pete.
I have been.
Oh.
We'll be back with scenes from next week's show, but first, a word from our sponsor. Tired of being alone? Have yourself cloned at Northwestern Cell. It's the next best thing to being. Be sure to be with us next time when we hear Pete say,
"But what about Naomi?"
Tune in again next week for the further adventures of Pete Moss, Space Detective!
Pete Moss, Space Detective, starring Brian Wesley, the author, as Pete Moss, also featured other former KFAI personalities like Jerry Majeski as the narrator, Brian Anderson from ZXQ Universe, Dave Rome from Shockwave, and that was fantasy writer Emma Bull as the heroine. Now, I am still Jerry Stearns. I'm the host of Sound Effects, a Radio Playground, and I hope you'll join us here next Sunday night for more Modern Audio Theater on Fresh Air Community Radio. It's stuff you won't find on any other radio station around town, that's for sure, including the kind of music you'll hear on Abby's Room for One, which starts now on Fresh Air. Join us again next week for more Modern Audio Theater and Comedy on Sound Effects, a Radio Playground, here on Fresh Air Radio.
Despertemos. Despertemos, humanidad. Ya no hay tiempo.
Make the fight for freedom every day, in the year, every year.
We must not let ourselves be divided.
Tuesday, January 27th is Active Voice on KFAI, a day of special programming spotlighting Minnesotans working toward justice in our current world. Learn more at kfai.org/activevoice.
Support for KFAI comes from First Avenue, presenting the McNasty Brass Band at the Turf Club Saturday, January 31st. Fat Tuesday comes early when the McNasty Brass Band brings the Minneapolis sound to the spirit of New Orleans. It's high-energy, up-tempo brass and percussion with a little old-school funk and a splash of R&B thrown in for good measure. More information about the McNasty Brass Band Live at the Turf Club is available at first-avenue.com.
In recognition of the freedom of speech protections on the First Amendment and the FCC's relaxed policy on late night and overnight language, this KFAI program may include song lyrics that some listeners might find objectionable. Listener discretion is advised.
You can't always get
try sometimes, you get what you need.
You are listening to Fresh Air Community Radio, 90.3 FM Minneapolis, going out to the stratosphere, or on the web at www.kfai.org, where you can catch this train wreck for the next 2 weeks. It's archived. This is Abby's Room for One.